Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm pleased to have back for the second time Lee Martin. And we have the advantage today of doing this live in studio at Voice Corps on West Broad Street in Columbus, Ohio. So thanks to Voice Corps for the use of their facilities. And first of all, Lee, it's great to see you, and welcome back to the Casey Kowar Show.
Thanks so much, Casey. It's really good to see you again. It's a good thing to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
The last time we did this, we were actually in the kitchen of my house here in Columbus. So you're one of the few authors that I actually had the honor to interview in person twice, two times in a row. So that's fun, too. Lee, the last time we talked about The Bright Forever. And when we did the interview in my house, little did we know that months later you would be, the book would be a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And go back to that time, if you will, and tell us a little bit about what that was like, how it changed your perception of your own writing, and what kind of an experience that was for you.
Well, it was a really great experience, of course, a very surprising one. I had been observing a graduate student's class the afternoon that this was announced, and I had no clue that I'd even been considered for the prize. And I got back to my office and found a lot of emails from people saying, "Hey, did you know that The Bright Forever was named a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize?" Nope, didn't know that. So it was a very, very exciting time. I think it raised expectations for the books to follow, and we'll see if I came through with this new book, Break the Skin.
Well, let me just state right off the bat, I think you did with Break the Skin. I read the Galleys a couple months ago, and I read it again for the second time over the last couple days. And if you like The Bright Forever, you're going to love Break the Skin. And Lee, if we could, let's just start with the title, Break the Skin. And I love the cover art that they chose for this novel. It has the tattoo. And we kind of live in a tattoo culture. So if you would, just kind of tell us a little bit about how you came up with the title, Break the Skin, and why that was important to you.
Well, the title actually comes from a song by a Columbus band called Watershed. One of their members, Joe Astrike, was an MFA student in our program at Ohio State, and has his own book coming out soon called Hitless Wonder, Life in Minor League Rock and Roll.
Cool.
Which was his MFA thesis that I directed here at Ohio State. But anyway, they have a song called Black Concert T-Shirt, and I lifted, with their permission, some of the lyrics for the epigraph. My steel toes start kicking. My new tattoo just ain't sticking. You got to break the skin. Take the needle. Just stick it in. And so I used, you know, Break the Skin as the title of the book. And that was because I knew right away that one of the characters was going to be Miss Baby, who runs a tattoo parlor in Texas. So I knew I was going to work with that image and metaphor of the tattoo. And I guess what I'm really trying to get at in this book is how we try to gauge our imprint on the people around us, on the world that we occupy, and how the main thing that the characters in this book want is to feel that they matter to somebody else. One of the narrators, Lainey, at one point says that it was all about wanting to matter to someone, doing things that you never thought you would do, all for the sake of love. Oh, you've got it right there. I can actually read it. It was all about wanting to matter to someone, wanting it so badly that you did things you never could have imagined, and you swore they were right, all for the sake of love. Thanks for that aid. I love that.
When I read a book, I read it from cover to cover, and I look at the dedications, and I look at the epigraphs, and I try to figure out, you know, why is this? And you dedicate the book. The book is dedicated to Miss Baby, and you said, who spoke to me from her heart. And so if you would tell us the genesis of how Miss Baby spoke to you from her heart. Because you don't begin the book with Miss Baby. You begin the book with Lanny Volk. But I love that that dedication.
Oh, but Casey, when the book first began in the first draft, it did begin with Miss Baby.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah, it really did. She was the first character who spoke to me.
Yeah.
You know, the first line I had in the writing of the first draft was Miss Baby's line, "This is the truth, Lordy McGordy, just listen. He was just there." That was the first thing I heard, and she was the first character who spoke to me. And so we don't have a book without Miss Baby speaking to me from her heart, which she did throughout the writing of the book. It's just that in the subsequent drafts, as I started to weave together the story of Miss Baby in Texas with the story of Lainey in Illinois, I had to start thinking about issues of pacing and where I needed to break each narrative to dovetail into the next section of the other character's narrative. And so finally a decision was made to start with Lainey at the moment that she's being taken into the police office for questioning regarding a crime in Illinois. At that point, the reader has no idea that Miss Baby is going to appear, and we have no idea how her story is going to finally intersect with Lainey's, but we have a sense that it's all going to focus upon this crime that's at the heart of the novel.
Mm-hmm. And the opening sentence, I mean, I think one of the things is you're a writing professor. The first sentence of a novel is critical, and the first sentence is, "The police came for me in the middle of the night," and that sentence doesn't draw a reader in, you know, I mean, that's, that, I know it drew me in, okay? And so how much time did you spend on that first sentence, or was it kind of like you kind of came up with that because you, because I remember The Bright Forever, there's a first sentence in The Bright Forever that draws you in
definitely
as well.
Yeah, the first sentence in The Bright Forever is, "I'm not saying I didn't do it."
Yeah.
"I don't know," which I don't want to revisit, you know, that in
right.
detail, but that was a line that came literally from a court transcript that was connected to the crime that was at the heart of that novel. But this line in Break the Skin, "The police came for me in the middle of the night," that's totally my line. I didn't lift it from any documents. And it's a line that I wrote in later drafts after I had determined that the book needed to open at the point that everything was starting to collapse. And then my strategy would be to go back in time and start building that house of cards to show how it came together before this point of collapse that opens the book. Then that's when I decided to write the line, "The police came for me in the middle of the night," because, of course, I hope that, you know, the question attached to that right away is, who is this that's speaking, and why do the police want to talk to her?
And Lanny Volk is, I really like her character. And it was, as I was really, we come to meet Lanny and Delilah Dade and Rose McAdaw, and I kind of almost came to see them almost kind of like the witches of Eastwick in a methamphetamine culture. And, but I liked Lanny, and she lost her father young, but one of the things that resonated with me the second time I read it was her daddy told her eventually everybody had to answer for the things they'd done. And so Lanny's, she's a good kid with very limited options.
Yeah, she is a good kid. 19 years old, possesses the singing voice of an angel that would take her places if she would only trust her talents. But she's a shy girl. She's a fatherless girl after her father's death. has some difficulties with her mother, ends up dropping out of high school before she can finish, and going to work at Walmart, where she meets Delilah Dade, a 35-year-old woman, much more experienced than Lainey. At the other side of a lot of tough relationships with men, but still soft at the heart and really longing for love. And so they end up living together in a trailer park in Mount Gilead, Illinois. And Lainey not only gets involved with, but actually invites this revenge plot against Rose McAdow, who, in the course of the novel, steals Delilah Dade's boyfriend. And Lainey really touches my heart because she's the character who I think has the best option of something beyond the small town trailer park culture, because she does have that talent of singing. So she lets that all go because she's so devoted to Delilah that when Delilah is hurting, Lainey allows her to believe that Rose McAdow has placed a hex on all of them. And the only way to relieve the hex is to kill Rose. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this plot is soon apparent to Lainey and Delilah that this is a bad idea. This would never work. But at this point, Lainey has given voice to that revenge plot. And when things start to go wrong in this romantic triangle of Delilah and Rose and the boyfriend Tweet, Lainey really can't go to the police. Because once she goes to the police, she'll have to tell them that, yes, there was this plot, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's a snowball effect of her initial adoration of Delilah that allows her to create this opportunity for the possibility of revenge against Rose.
And one of the things that you introduced, and we won't give any of the ultimate plot twists away because there are a lot of them towards the end of the book, and we obviously don't need to put a spoiler alert in. We'll stay away from those. But you introduced the element of evil pretty strongly in the first section of the book, and evil in the sense of the hexes and this kind of thing. And I found that kind of an interesting kind of vein for you to pursue with that. And I was wondering if you did any research on that, or if that was something that you had read about, or it was just intriguing to me.
Now you sly dog, you have found me out. Break the Skin is actually based on a true story.
Okay.
Involving a woman in a small town in southeastern Illinois, very close to where I grew up, who was able to convince three other people that a young girl had placed a hex on all of them, what they call a death hex, meaning the only way to get rid of the hex is to kill the person who placed it in the first place. I took a lot of liberties with that storyline, but that's where I got really fascinated with the question of how is it possible that a fairly unremarkable woman in a very small town could hold so much influence over these three other people? And I was particularly drawn to the story of the young girl upon whom I pattern Lainey, because the real girl was someone who had never been in trouble with the law, had been a good kid, her teacher spoke highly of her, etc. And I was just taken with the story of how her life ended up taking such a dramatic turn because of the influence of this other woman. And so I set out to try to figure out exactly how that could happen. You know, the people and the characters in Breaks of Skin, as you said earlier, don't have a lot of options. They're trapped by economic circumstances, educational circumstances, etc. But they are, like all of us, longing for connection to other people, longing for someone to love and someone they can love in return. And so they find themselves grabbing on to whatever gives them hope. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's, I guess, what Alice Hoffman has called practical magic.
Yes.
They grab onto the sense that maybe they can determine the direction of their lives by practicing these spells, et cetera.
Well, I live in Orlando, Florida now, okay? And she would be very, I mean, I run into thousands of Flannies in Central Florida, and I see much more of culture down there of superstition and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. It's a much more multicultural region to live in. So to me, it was extremely believable. Okay, you see chickens running around down there without their heads. You know, so I say that tongue in cheek. Okay, but it's a little different than Columbus, Ohio.
Right, right.
Now let's go to Miss Baby in Denton, Texas. And she's a tattoo artist, and she runs into Lester Stipp. And why don't you tell us a little bit about Miss Baby and Lester and Donnie. Donnie True, I love that name. And when Miss Baby comes in, what happens to the story?
Well, the first main section of the book concentrates on what we've just been talking about in Illinois with Lainey and Delilah and Rose and Tweet. And Lainey's boyfriend, Lester Stipp. When we open the second section of the book in Denton, Texas, Miss Baby steps out of her tattoo parlor one evening and sees a man standing on the corner. This man is Lester Stipp, but he tells Miss Baby that he doesn't know who he is or how he got to where he is standing at that moment. We find out later that Lester suffers from dissociative fugues. He's a war veteran who obviously suffers from some post-traumatic stress syndrome. And part of that is occasionally he will slip into these fugues where he picks up and goes. And it may be a day or two before he realizes who he is and what he's done, or it may be a longer period of time. The problem in this situation, though, is as Miss Baby starts to wonder after he's been with her for a while, it's whether he's really suffering from a fugue or whether he's just on the run and looking for a place to hide because of what's going on in Illinois. But on the evening she first finds him, it's as if she sees an opportunity. When he tells her that he needs help, he doesn't know who he is, she tells him, "Why, you're Donnie. You're my husband. You're Donnie True." And he buys into it. And they start a life together there in Denton. And it's a good life for them as they fall in love. But coming on down the road is the moment where Miss Baby discovers that the police are looking for Donnie, or as his real name, Lester Stipp.
And when I started reading the section on Miss Baby, at first I can remember very clearly, I was thinking to myself, where is Lee going with this? I mean, is this going to be believable or not? And as I went into it, I ended up buying into the facade that they created for each other. And I don't think it's probably as uncommon as, I mean, we do it maybe not as literally as they do it, but we do it every day with people. We're the people we would like people to see us, that we're the people we want I'm the person I want you to see. And so we do it on maybe not quite a director level as they do, but we do it every day. So after a while, I was just kind of like, yeah. You know, were you concerned at first that people were going to say, I don't know about this?
Well, yeah, I was a little concerned about that. But what I tried to do was to just humanize the whole situation and to observe it in close detail and to make it work that way. You know, one thing I do is I give Miss Baby a similar storyline to the women in Illinois in the respect that she's not had particularly happy experiences with men and yet still longs for romance. She is a collector of fairy figurines, so she believes in what she calls the underworld, the world of fairies and spirits that can visit us from time to time. She keeps glass bottles hanging from the branches of her mimosa tree and chili peppers around the door frame of the front door as a way of warding away evil spirits. So there's that kind of thematic overlap. She stepped out of that tattoo parlor and found Lester Stipp, and when he said, I need help, I don't know who I am, I couldn't stop her. She claimed him.
Mm-hmm.
She claimed this man and told him he was her husband. And then, to her fortune, I think, he started to fall in love with her, and she started to fall in love with him, and they had this really good life. So I just tried to make it convincing through the details and through this close observation of what human beings want and to what extremes they'll go to get what they want.
Yeah. And I also liked the relationship that goes on, again, no spoiler alerts or anything, the relationship with Carolyn and Pablo. I really like the parallelism you use. At first there's this gulf that they have, but again, it's this understanding of this was being done for love. And so Carolyn, who's kind of her, Pablo's, who's kind of her brother, is kind of a nightmare. And they come to understand each other as the novel progresses.
Yeah, I mean, Pablo is Miss Baby's brother, and he's in a mess of his own making, being sought after by a business associate, with air quotes around that, a man named Slam Dent. They've become involved in a scheme that's gone wrong, and Slam is looking for his measure of revenge against Pablo. Carolyn is Pablo's ex-wife, and she and Miss Baby, as the novel opens, have a very tense relationship, I guess I'll say. But as you say, during the course of the book, they start to understand each other a little bit more, and they start to understand that they really occupy similar ground in the respect, as you've been talking about, that they each long for love, mm-hmm. and they're willing to do extreme things to get to the happy place they want to be.
And this is meant as a very much a compliment. Is that I kind of, with Miss Baby, I was kind of like, if Laura from the Glass Menagerie had lived and maybe had children or nieces or cousins, that Miss Baby could have been somewhere in the Tennessee Williams family tree of characters, you know, in terms of the figurines and everything. And I like that, you know, that kind of image. It kind of evoked some real powerful images in my head, you know, of that, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, if Miss Baby had been the Latina cousin of Laura Holyfield.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been a lot of things that have had to happen together, but they would have been able to have a conversation. They would have been able to have coffee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, one, I know the music that runs through the novel, Break the Skin, published by Crown, which is the book we're discussing today. One of my favorite artists of all time. I've been in love with her. It's a sick, if we ever met, it would be sicker than any relationship in Break the Skin, is with Lucinda Williams. And if you would talk a little bit about Lucinda Williams, her role in this book, because, I mean, that woman, if you've never listened to Lucinda Williams' music, first of all, read Break the Skin. and then download Car Wheels on a Gravel Road and anything else that Lucinda Williams has done. She's absolutely, she and Steve Earle are two of my favorite artists in the world.
I'm glad to know we share that affection for Lucinda.
Oh, I love her. Yeah.
Yeah, her
music. We kill each other.
Yeah. Her music's always meant a lot to me. A particular song of hers that was in my mind as I wrote this book is World Without Tears. Mm-hmm. As Lainey says at one point in the book, she makes reference to Lucinda Williams' music, and she describes her music as being songs from a woman who had been hurt every which way that a woman can be hurt, but still had this longing for love. And I think that Lucinda's music is really in touch with much of what I'm trying to explore in my work, which is the way people hurt each other, what it takes to get beyond that hurt, what it takes to keep hope alive in the midst of bad situations. As her most recent music has shown us, you can get to a place where things are happier.
And a lot of people don't know that Lucinda Williams, her father was the poet laureate of the United States, a very distinguished poet.
And actually somebody I studied with at the University of Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah, Miller Williams was teaching at Arkansas when I was in the MFA program there.
How cool was that?
Yeah, very cool. And I did an independent study with him one summer in modern British and American poetry. But he has a poem that is my poem that I use in almost any writing workshop I teach. It's a poem called Let Me Tell You. And it's about how to write a poem, but really it's about how to write anything. And the first few lines are, let me tell you how to do it from the beginning. First, notice everything.
That's great. That's great. I'm going to be stealing that. Okay. Back to Lainey. Lainey says to Lester, so I told him there are as many ways to hurt people as there were to help them. And I it's kind of what you were just talking about. That's kind of one of the themes. And if you will, now let's move on to the character of Polk and how you used him strategically as an author. What was he able to accomplish for you? Because you write it from a very interesting perspective, again, of the first person narratives from the characters. And then we have a character, Polk, who kind of, how did he serve you as a storyteller?
Yeah, Polk is a 15-year-old boy who lives in the house between where Lainey eventually lives with her mother, and then the house where Rose and Tweed are living. And in between those two houses is the Hambrick house, which is Polk's grandfather, and Polk lives there with him. Polk is this kid who likes to roam around town at night and look into people's windows, but not from any sort of sexual purient way, but as a way of just kind of keeping track of people and what they're doing, what they're up to. He becomes, for me, as close to the moral compass of the book as I can get. He knows everyone's secrets, but what comes through, I hope, in his character is that he cares deeply for the people around him. He cares very deeply for Lainey. He catches people in unguarded moments, and so he knows their intimate moments of loneliness, of despair, of indiscretion, etc. And he is, in a sense, the seer of the book. And eventually he gets drawn into what's going on with Lainey and Delilah and Rose in a way that takes him to a point where he sees too much.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the book, when everything has sort of come down, he's devastated by it. Because I think he really believes in the goodness of people. And in his very, rough 15-year-old way, he's a very good person. And he's trying to keep everybody on the right track. But as I said, he's very close to Lainey, and so he finds himself, as they all do, doing things that he probably wouldn't ordinarily do just for the sake of the love that he feels.
Yeah, probably the purest love, the purest love in a book is the love between Lainey and Polk, because it's honest, and there's nothing, he's not looking to anything from her nor she from him. And,
right.
And we'll leave it at that. But that's one of the denouements of the book that I really enjoy, and I think readers will enjoy, is really the last 50 pages of the book really shift. They kind of go from the expository to all of the things that happen. And I really liked, particularly the second time as I was reading it through, I really liked the nuances you used as you come to your resolution of the characters, and I found it all very believable and very just, I guess, which is something I think readers want in a novel.
Well, yeah, and I think that, I tell my students that the first two-thirds of a novel is usually analogous to building a brick wall, getting each brick in place, each element of the story, and then the last third of the book is dismantling that brick wall. And so what the characters have set in motion with their own actions have to have some sort of consequence, some sort of resolution. And that's what I'm trying to do in the last third of this book, where the crucial day that has formed the mystery of the book, where all of those events become clear to the reader.
And again, we're discussing Break the Skin, published by Crown, written by Lee Martin. Now available online and in bookstores. And Lee, before we wrap up, I like the role that rock and roll plays as well. It's kind of this. Short Helmets on the Bus, Small Helmets on the Bus. That's the name of the band.
Helmets on the Short Bus.
Helmets on the Short Bus. I had the right words, but I had them in the wrong order.
Right.
And I was kind of, those scenes in the book kind of took me back to my college years, where I used to go into clubs and hear someone play Stairway to Heaven or something, they were like gods in these little towns that they were in. But during the day, you might run into him at the Red Roof Inn cleaning out the pool.
Oh, yeah, and like Tweet, he's jockeying cars for the Ford dealership,
running
into Terre Haute, Indianapolis, et cetera.
But at night, the man.
He is the man on stage at the South End Tavern.
Yeah. And it seemed to me like you were having fun when you wrote about Tweet. It seemed like you were that was a character that you had fun with.
Yeah, it was fun to write that character because, I grew up in these small towns and I saw all these guys become, as you say, gods because of their involvement in rock and roll bands. It's funny to think about where they are now.
There actually was a band in Columbus called the Gods.
Oh, cool.
Back in the 70s, Eric Moore, and I remember one time on the lead guitarist, and they were good, they had an album. And I remember one time I saw like the lead guitarist at a Chevy dealership or something, and I was kind of like devastated. I was like, this guy, I go see him at the Agora, and he's this larger than life character, Hey, we all have to grow up sometime. Lee, now that you have Break the Skin, it's done, it's in the bookstores. What are you most satisfied with, do you think, with this novel? What, now that you've got it put to bed, what are you happiest about with it?
Well, as with most of my novels, that feature characters in small towns in my native Midwest, I'm always just really proud that I was able to tell the story of what the short story writer Frank O'Connor would call a submerged population. A group of people who don't have a very strong voice in our culture, And I hope that I've given them a voice in this novel that has a degree of dignity to it that dignifies and validates their lives, no matter how ill-considered some of the steps along the way are for them.
And I would just say hear, hear to that, because I do get tired of reading novels where every character is a senator, or in the second chapter you meet the President of the United States, or a Hollywood star or something. And, you know, I think Raymond Carver would like the characters in this book. I think Andre Debuse would like the characters in this book, because let's face it, how many people work at Walmart? A lot.
A lot of people, yeah.
A lot of people. And they lead interesting lives.
Well, that's my point exactly, that, you know, we tend to be dismissive of some of these people, but their lives are just as emotionally complicated as the lives of the senators, the presidents, the CEOs, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lee, congratulations on a fine novel, Break the Skin. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. And it's the kind of novel that, again, the first time I read it in, I believe it was two sittings, because it was kind of like once I got started, I couldn't put the bookmark in there because I wanted to find out what happened next. And to me, that's the sign of a good story and the sign of a good writer. So congratulations on Break the Skin. Best of luck with it, and it's great to see you again.
Thanks so much, Casey. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to The Casey Kowar Show, A Celebration of Words. My guest today has been Lee Martin. We've been discussing Break the Skin, published by Crown. And thank you for listening. Look forward to speaking with you soon.